Welcome to the Sales History Podcast with your host, author of The Transparency Sale and the Transparent Sales Leader, Todd Capone. Each episode brings you the incredible and sometimes strange minds, philosophies, and approaches from sales history's past with relevance to today. Here's Todd.
Hello, and welcome back to the Sales History Podcast. Today, I want to dig into 100-plus-year-old sales objections. And so, to start, you know this, in the sales world, objections are going to happen, right? In the pursuit of revenue, your clients, your prospects, they inject logical explanations as to why their status quo is not worth changing, right? Or why their status quo is not worth changing with you. Now, sometimes those objections are real and valid. Sometimes they're just knee-jerk embellishments to simply get the individual back to whatever was consuming their mind at that given moment, right? But here's the thing. In 1907, so in the time of this recording, it's 115 years ago, there was a book called 400 Talking Points. And in this book, what it was a collection of 37 what they called sales authorities, one set of articles that were sharing their strategies for objection handling. What's amazing about it is in the ad for it, there was a list of a ton of those possible objections, and wow, they haven't changed really at all in 100 years. It's the same objections you hear today. And the funny thing is, from the classes that I see and the posts that I see on LinkedIn, the approaches really haven't changed either, at least not much. And so what I want to do today is I want to take you to the 1920 version. So at this point, that 400 talking points had become 600 talking points. And it was put together by Worthington C. Holman, who's an individual we've talked about before. Now, this collection was considered, quote, not theoretical, but actual brass tacks answers, which have been fire tested and have proven that they will bring home the bacon, right? And with all of these, whether it's today or whether it's 100 and whatever years ago, the whole point of this was, hey, listen, you know these are coming. It's possible for the salesperson to go out with answers to every objection that they will meet. And that's really the point. So today, I want to take you through some of them and then give you my perspective on objection handling in 2022 and beyond. But today, let's start by going to 1920s version and handle different flavors of not interested. The push down, I'm the wrong person objection, the flat out not interested objection, the we tried this before and we're not interested objection, and the I've never heard of your company objection. I also want to give you a couple of interesting ones around the risk averse objection, meaning the individual says, I'm not willing to sign, too risky. And then the too busy objection, which I thought was kind of funny. And like I said, we'll come back around at the end to give you my take on objections today. All right, so without further ado, let's go back 102 years. Okay, so the first objection I want to talk about today is the, you know what, I'm going to turn you over to somebody else. And it's essentially, the way that I'm reading it, it's the push-down objection, where you go in and you're going to looking to talk to a leader or somebody who is a decision maker, and they're like, I've got people that handle that. Now, for all of these, by the way, we're going to revert to the person that's being sold to as Mr. Blank. And the reason that we're going to do that is, in just about every single one of these, they refer to that individual as Mr. Blank. So it's just a quote right out of it. But if you're wondering who Mr. Blank is, it's the person that you're trying to reach. So I will turn you over to somebody else. How would they respond to it in 1920? Well, here's this answer, and I thought it was kind of clever. Mr. Blank, suppose you received a letter marked personal and confidential. Would you allow any casual subordinate to open it? Now, suppose you sent a salesman out to make a personal proposition to a man. Suppose he said to your representative, I'll turn you over to one of my employees. Wouldn't you say, hey, why didn't you tell the man that the message was intended for his ears alone, not for someone else? Why didn't you follow my instructions? Well, that is exactly my position here. My instructions are to see the head of the firm, as only the head of the firm can appreciate or pass on what I will have to say. So That was number one. That was pretty good, right? It's a funny way to kind of take this back and make it relatable. That whole personal and confidential thing, I think it was pretty good. So that was number one. Let's move on to the second one. Okay, so as promised, this one is the objection, quote, "I have no interest in your proposition." How would this have been handled in 1920? Well, here is your answer. "Mr. Blank, out of seven men whom I have sold to today, five began by telling me that they had no interest in my proposition." All right, so side note, that is exactly how I used to teach this to companies back in the early 2000s, is you start with empathize and relatability. Like, hey, others said the same thing. So that's exactly what they're doing there. And then they go on to say, "That was because they did not understand it. But when they gave me the opportunity to explain to them just what my proposition was, they found that it did have points of interest which they had not expected. I do not wish to be insistent or to annoy you, but I meet that statement, 'I have no interest,' so universally from so many of the men who buy from me that I feel sure each time a man tells me that he is mistaken. Now, sometimes I'm wrong, and I find that after all, they have no interest in my proposition. Then I do not waste their time by trying to talk about it. But in justice to yourself, I think you ought to let me have 3 minutes to explain what my proposition is." So that was the "I have no interest in your proposition" response from 1920, and I will pull books from the last 20 years that almost say it word for word. It's amazing that the structure and the process has not changed at all. So let's keep going. The next objection that I wanted to talk about today is another form of not interested. And I thought this was kind of a clever way to handle the "I've tried this proposition before and I'm not interested," meaning it's an individual who has got experience with the solution being sold, and as a result, they don't want to have the conversation. And so here was how the response to that was handled back in 1920. "You must not forget, Mr. Blank, that very many improvements have lately been made in the device I am selling. It is vastly superior to what it was when you last saw it. Now, suppose you state the faults you had when you last tried the device. We can then take them one by one. The perfecting of every time and labor-saving device resembles the exploration of a rich gold mine. At first, vast labor is required, but that does not induce the miner to give up. It's much the same with an invention. The inventor knows the splendid ultimate reward awaiting him when he gets this device perfect. Every month since you tried this article, it has been improved and bettered in scores of ways. Today, thousands of businessmen like you are using it to great advantage. It is immensely superior in every way to what it was a short time ago." So that one is, "I've tried this before and I'm not interested," and that gold mine example and analogy is kind of funny. So let's keep going. We'll go to number four. Okay, for this one, the response is, "I've never heard of you. I've never heard of this line before." And so this is how they would have responded back then. And again, I thought this was pretty creative too. The individual starts by saying, "Mr. Blank, if you will look in Dunn's or Bradstreet's," which today is Dun and Bradstreet, "you'll find that there are hundreds of thousands of concerns doing business in this country, and you cannot possibly know them all, even slightly. How many millions of people are there in different parts of this enormous country who have never heard of your store? Yet, if one of them came to this town, you wouldn't think it logical for him to say, 'I won't buy from Mr. Blank because I've never heard of him before.' The mere fact that I am here, so many miles from the home city of my firm, proves that my firm is progressive, alive, splendidly organized, keen after new business, and able to give satisfaction to customers. If you were introduced to a man for the first time, you would never think of saying, 'I've never heard of you before.' If that man is a good man to know, you are glad to meet him for the first time. That is true of my line. You may never have seen or heard of it before, yet I know that the goods I offer constitute a bargain, and I'm sure it will pay you to give me an order. In the end, you'll be glad that you met me. So that was, I've never heard of you before. And again, a really good analogy and kind of a funny way to handle that. All right, let's go to number 5. And again, there's only 6, so hang with me. We're going to go through 2 more here. This next one I also very much enjoyed, and it was, I hate to take the risk in signing. Meaning, we've got an individual here that is worried about the risk. And so the response here I thought was pretty clever. So here goes. Risk, Mr. Blank, is a relative term. When I boarded a train to come here, I took a certain amount of risk. There might have been a collision, or the train might have run off the track. The hotel might have burned down last night. I might have met with an accident coming up the street. It would be impossible to live for a single day without taking a chance of some kind. Now, the way to avoid accidents is to take precautions. Before I cross the street, I look out for traffic. Before I board a train, I take out an accident policy. Having been in a fire once, I see to it that the fire escape is in working order. In this way, I reduce risk to a minimum. And you can do the same, Mr. Blank. I mean, the business who uses foresight in his business takes next to no chances. It's the one who buys the wrong class of goods at the wrong time who loses money. You know, Mr. Blank, that this line of goods is right up to date. You know that the prices could not be lower and still be consistent with quality. You know as well as I do that there's a big demand for this class of merchandise. You take absolutely no risk in signing this application. All right, so that was number 5, how to handle risk. And gosh, it takes you back again. This is 1920, and some of these responses could be further back than that. But the whole idea of, I've been in a fire before, my train might explode. Like, it just sounds really funny to me, but it's true. We're all taking risks, and being able to use that analogy to handle it as an objection in the sales process is kind of funny, but I'm guessing really highly relatable. All right, so let's go on to number 6. Okay, last but not least for today is, I can't see you today, right? It's the too busy response. It's the I have other priorities response. And the way that this individual handles it is pretty clever as well. And here's how they do it. The little time, Mr. Blank, that it will take for me to explain my proposition, you will never miss. If you knew that I came to pay a bill of $50, would you consider it worthwhile to meet me if that was the only way that you could collect the bill? In reality, I'm bringing you the cash equivalent of much more than $50 in the profits you can get from handling my line. But if you don't see me, you can't secure those profits. The minutes you spend with me today, Mr. Blank, will mean dollars in your pockets every day for months to come. Spend a few minutes in looking over my samples, and you will agree that I have underestimated rather than overestimated the opportunity I offer you. Now, as I mentioned before, the book is called 600 Talking Points. I could literally go through these all day. I've read probably 50 of them. These are some of my favorites, but there's so many good ones, I could probably do another episode on it. But the point that I want you to remember is that most of these objections and things that come up, they haven't changed in 100 years. They're the same ones that come up over and over again. And the responses and the books that you read on these things, basically it's the same stuff over and over again. But I thought that it might be fun to just kind of give you my take on objections today. And it's really this idea that if you know they're coming, we should be prepared to handle it, right? That's always been the way that they thought about it. But here's the thing. Have you ever seen the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray?
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen.
No, that's okay. Thank you.
In this 1993 movie, so Bill played a character called Phil Connors, who is a wry television weatherman covering the annual Groundhog Day event in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Now, he becomes trapped in the day, and he's forced to relive this February 2nd over and over again. Now, in the end, Bill Murray, or Phil Connors, whatever you want to call him, figures out what obstacles keep coming up repeatedly, and then spends each repeating day preparing to handle each, in many cases, before they even come up. And that's my take on this. Like, in the selling world, I believe we can do the same. I mean, we do have a responsibility to know what valid objections might come up. And if they come up often, we can not only predict them, but can we disarm them before they become objections later? In so doing, we speed sales cycles by helping the customer better assess reality. We increase win rates, partially because we're probably better qualifying in the deals that we should win, but also qualifying out the deals we would likely lose anyway. So, for example, let's say your solution is higher priced than alternative solutions. I'm a believer in starting with it because you know that's going to come up. So during your initial meeting with the client, can you explain that, hey, based on what you're trying to achieve coupled with your environment, price for a solution like ours is likely to be between X and Y dollars. Now, if that's way out of whack with your expectations, best we talk more about that now. In other words, if you're talking about a six-figure solution to a four-figure buyer, would it not be best to vet that out now versus 3 months from now after you've burned countless hours and resources on the opportunity? Again, it's transparency. It's leading with the objections that you know are likely to come up. I mean, imagine your solution does not have something another solution does. Why can't you start with it so that you're not battling it at the end? In the initial meeting, it wouldn't hurt to be able to explain that, hey, listen, there's certain things that we give up to be great at our core. For example, our solution doesn't have X, while some other options do. And there's a reason why we've chosen this route. But if X is going to be really an important requirement, let's talk about that up front. I'm just a firm believer in controlling the message, because if X is in fact going to be important, wouldn't you rather they find out from you versus the competitor? Wouldn't you rather they find out now or after you've burned countless hours and resources on the opportunity? Objection handling, right? If these things are coming up over and over again, we have a responsibility to know, to be prepared for it. But I believe because of the proliferation of reviews and feedback and our understanding of how the buying brain engages, transparency wins. Transparency sales. Embracing what you give up to be great at your core and leading with it actually brings in customers, brings them in pre-qualified. And like I said, you'll find that decision cycles happen much more rapidly. Your win rate goes up. You've qualified in opportunities better. You qualify out the ones you're going to lose anyway. And you make it really difficult on your competitors to message against you. So with that is today's episode, Objection Handling, circa 1907 to 1920. And as you were listening to it, it probably didn't feel that old, did it? So thank you, as always, for listening. I so appreciate it. I appreciate the reviews and the feedback that I've been getting on this. Please share this with friends, with individuals that also you think would get value in doing it. I only do this as a hobby. I do this for fun. And as always, if you've got ideas or things you want me to dig into, it's my nerdery. It's what, when cool people are doing cool things on the weekend, I'm digging into this kind of stuff. And really enjoy the whole process. So thanks again for giving your time and listening.